Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. Hi there, thanks for joining us. Well, over the past couple of days, the frosts of Canberra have been warmed by the ardour of a group of demonstrators in support of one of those causes that has tended to quickly slip off the agenda in Australia: international aid. Many Australians, in a rush of idealism surrounding the turning of the millennium almost a decade ago, got caught up in supporting what are known as the Millennium Goals. You remember, sort of rock stars, Bono, all of those guys, Tony Blair, all beating their breasts and saying, yes, we'll commit ourselves to this. Well, those events turned our attention, albeit briefly, away from our narrow nationalisms towards a wider vision as contributors to the world. However, as in all things, in the wake of the global financial crisis, the failure of Copenhagen on climate and the immediacy of local events from the Australian drought to the United States oil disaster, it's easy to see global priorities slipping from the pages of our newspapers and out of our consciousness. Well, this being an election year, well, almost, given that Kevin Rudd has said it could be March, April next year, Voices for Justice is a national gathering of the Mica Challenge, a church-based campaign in support of the Millennium Goals. And in Canberra this week, they've been paying attention to political realities. Their website promotes this weekend's activities as a time to learn how to lobby, meet your MP and other advocates of all ages from around the country, connect your faith with politics and justice, and put it all into practice at Parliament House, as we call our leaders to bring about the world we want to see, a world of justice and compassion. But first, this week, you may have seen the headlines in some newspapers regarding a steep decline in religious observance in Australia. The figures were contained in a report by the Christian Research Association of Australia, and their senior research officer is Philip Hughes. And Philip Hughes joins us now. Philip, thanks for joining us on Sunday night.
Evening, John.
Philip, your figures indicate that baseline Christian commitment, that is, those attending a worship service at least once a month, has declined from 23% to 16% in the years from 1993 to 2010. That's a drop of 7% in 17 years. It's beginning to approach the levels of attendance we associate with secular Europe and Britain.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It certainly has been dropping. And yes, we are approaching some of the other countries in Europe. Yes,
we are talking here about not about belief, but adherence. That is regular attendance, aren't we?
Sure. Although there has been a drop too in belief as well. So belief in God has certainly dropped significantly, and other beliefs have dropped as well.
To what extent is it comparable? I mean, is it 7% in a drop in belief in God generally?
In fact, it's a little more than that. It's actually 14%. 61% of the population said that they believed in God back in 1993. That's dropped to 47%.
So we're looking not just at a decline in institutional church attendance or religious observance, we're looking at a general loss of belief.
Yes, yes, that's right. Although that is belief in the Christian faith as defined by the churches, I think, because the proportion of people who see themselves as spiritual and who think that there is something out there has actually remained round about constant. What we've actually seen is while there's less believing in God, there's more believing that there is some sort of higher power beyond.
So we're all in a sense creating our own idea of what lies beyond.
Yes, yes, that's right.
A few years ago, around 1998, the figures appeared to be going the other way.
Certainly, between 1993 and 1998, there wasn't much of a sign of a drop at all. It's within the last 10 years that the drop has been most noticeable.
And is there any distinction with the, or any leads given by things like the sample size and age distribution of the group you've been looking at?
It's true right across the age groups. The drop has occurred amongst all the age groups. The sample size is quite large. It's a survey of 1,718 adult Australians, which is much larger than most polls would use. And it's a pretty reliable sample. So it's unlikely that it's a biased result.
Yes, one of the interesting things is that one of your figures seems to confirm one of the anecdotal observations we've made here on Sunday night from time to time based on our listeners' comments over the past few years, that there's been something of a giving up on the institution of church by the group aged between 50 and 60. That is, they seem to have stuck at it when their baby boomer mates left back in the 1960s, but they've finally thrown in the towel.
Yes, that certainly happened, and their level of interest in the church is pretty low. There's actually more people in their 30s, or a higher proportion of people in their 30s attending church than there are people in their 50s.
Yes, and interestingly enough, you've got this sort of bounce with people in their 30s, yet you go then to the next cohort below, the 15 to 29-year-olds, and there's a drop there of 27%, which seems to be reflective of the 50 and 59-year-olds. Is this something of a generational inheritance we're picking up here?
I think it is. I mean, it goes back to the 70s and people growing up in the 70s where there was a lot of turmoil in society and a significant moving away from the traditions of society in a whole range of ways, including the Christian traditions. And it's the people in the 50s now who were part of that rebellious group. Certainly some stayed around and have recently given it up. But and it's their children who are now, many of them in their 20s or late 20s and who have picked up the those patterns of rejection of faith as their parents.
Let me ask you one other question before we let you go, because I actually think we could devote a whole program to this issue, and perhaps we can in over the next few months get some people around to talk about this as a whole. But before we let you go this evening, once again, evangelical and charismatic denominations appear to be holding the line better than the mainline established churches. But is the general trend of fall off the same in those churches? That is, they're holding the line sort of generally, but is the trend still there?
There's certainly, this survey pointed out that there are quite a few people, for example, who grew up in the Baptist churches and who now say that they have no religion. Now, the proportion of them is not as high as it is in the mainstream churches, such as the Anglican and the Uniting Church and the Catholic Lutheran churches. But there are quite a few who've left. On the other hand, there's more who've come into the Baptist churches and certainly into the Pentecostal churches. So that's where growth is occurring.
But the growth isn't enough to make up for the drop-off generally.
Well, in the Baptist churches are nearly holding their own or sort of maintaining their numbers, but dropping slightly in terms of percentage of the population. The Pentecostals, on the other hand, are still growing, but only very slowly.
Philip Hughes, fascinating stuff. We'd love to talk to you some more, and doubtless we will in a month or so's time when we can bring together a group of people to discuss these things after they've had a chance to digest what you've been saying. Philip Hughes with the Christian Research Association, thanks for joining us on Sunday night.
Thanks, John.
Philip Hughes. And here's the Blind Boys of Alabama with Ben Harper and Make It to the Church on Time. See, if it was like that every Sunday, you'd be there every Sunday, wouldn't you? You would, indeed, I'm sure. Gotta have meaning. Get me to the church on time, or make it to the church on time. Ben Harper and the Blind Boys of Alabama, you're on Sunday night. John Cleary with you. This weekend in Canberra, there's a group of people making a fuss in Canberra over international aid. They happen to be members of churches under the banner of the Micah Challenge, a fight to hold the line on commitments to international aid and development. So, what's been learned this week in Canberra, and does it matter to any of us? What's been the outcome of the broad coalition of groups assembled under the Micah Challenge to lobby government and politicians, and perhaps even get into our faces in our local communities about our responsibilities to those overseas less fortunate than ourselves? Well, I'm joined in the studio now by some from Canberra. I'm joined by Dave Andrews in our Canberra studios, and also by Carlin Chen. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And also in our Sydney studios by Andrew Sloan of Morling College in Sydney, the Baptist College. Andrew, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Now, Carlin, perhaps I could come to you first. What was the purpose of getting together this weekend, and who was involved?
The purpose of this weekend, and we're only halfway through, was to invite Christians of all ages and all experiences from around the country to come together and make speaking up for justice for the poor integral to their faith. And not just to come and talk about that, but to put it into action. So this weekend, we've been learning and training people. We've been looking at within ourselves about the kind of world we want to see and what God has to say and how we start with ourselves in being that change. And then we've been training with really practical skills on how we bring that change. Once we've repented of our own complicity in global injustice, how then do we call for justice? And the focus this weekend has been on speaking to our nation's leaders about Australia being a responsible international citizen.
So it hasn't just been about flag waving, it's actually been about learning the skills of political lobbying as much as anything else.
Yeah, political lobbying, but also how social change happens. Political lobbying is just one part of that. We also know that we need to go back to our communities and spread the word. We need to be an example in our communities. We need to invite others along on that journey to learn and to take action and to speak up so that the cultural values of our society changes, and that makes the space for political change much easier.
Sounds like the Christian version of Get Up. Is that the sort of learning how to do progressive lobbying in a technologically savvy era?
I guess there are some similarities there, and Get Up's obviously very creative in what they do with getting refugees surfing lessons with Tony Abbott. But we believe with Micah Challenge that it's that the faith aspect is really important, and that that's what can sustain people for the long term, is that if we change internally first, if we have a conviction that as part of our faith we actually need to speak up for justice, it's not an optional extra, then that should be a lifelong journey that we're part of. It's not just a campaign that we take part in for a short period of time.
Dave Andrews, let me bring you into the conversation. You've somebody who's tramped around these boards a number of times over the years, and sort of Christians getting active on various issues is, surprisingly, it may appear to some, as difficult as getting people in the rest of the community motivated. Are you noticing any substantial change over the years that you've been involved in this sort of activism?
John, I think we're living in a very interesting period of time. I think that zeitgeist or the spirit of the time is such at the moment that there's a new openness. In fact, I haven't seen as many groups responding to global issues and being willing to experiment with alternatives personally and politically today as I have seen for many years. I think the last time I saw the range of experiments and the degree of risk that people were prepared to take to engage issues, I don't think I've seen that since the late 60s and early 70s. So I think that there is a window of opportunity for us to engage global issues with much more vigour than we have been able to do for a while.
Is this age specific, or are you seeing a general tendency across age groups? Or is it just a particularly, you know, a cohort of young people have come along at the moment who are particularly open to these things?
What I think is fantastic about it is that there are many young people here, but it's not just young people. So both those things are important. I think the fact that young people are wanting to engage rather than just cynically switch off, I think that that's fantastic. But I think that what's also equally fantastic is that it's not just young people, that there's a cohort of people includes people that are older and younger and middle-aged, and together there seems to be a willingness to engage these issues with, quite robustly.
Andrew Sloan, let me bring you into the conversation here. You're somebody who works at a college that trains ministers, among other people who are interested in theology. One of the perennial battles here, and I could use actually a biblical aphorism, take the plank out of your own eye. I mean, isn't this as much a problem for people inside the church as it is lobbying politicians outside the church? That is there not just as large a degree of apathy within church congregations as there is in the general community on these issues?
That can certainly be the case. I think I'd agree with Dave that there's been a shift. I would say in the last 5 to 10 years, particularly in the churches that I know most about, which would be the evangelical churches, Baptists and others, I think there's been a sea change in attitude. 5, 10 years ago, it was an uphill battle to get people to even read the stuff in their Bibles that so clearly speaks about justice and God's concern for the poor. There's not the same kind of uphill battle now. There seems to be a general recognition that this is something that God cares about, that God gives us stuff about it, and so should we. And the arguments now are more about what do we do and how do we do it. So I think the people that we're seeing trained, there's a significant shift, and I think there's also a significant shift in the churches.
That's a pretty profound shift in the way people view the role of faith in their life.
Right.
That is that they're moving from what many politicians have been arguing should be the case, that is, religion is a private affair, right, and should be kept to yourself, to actually a position which says, no, unless religion's engaged with the community, it's of no earthly use.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's not the result of a softening of theology. It's the result, I think, of a sharper awareness and perhaps a willingness to understand, to be open to some of the stuff that the Bible has to say. Whereas in the past, because people have been given this grid which says religion is a private thing, it's about what's in my heart, it's not what my hands do or what my mouth does outside of church or wherever I happen to pray, I think that grid is being broken down and people are recognising that there's a huge amount of stuff that the Bible says that we must respond to. Now, obviously, there's resistance and it's a bit patchy, but as I said, I think there's a significant change.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia. We're talking about an event taking place in Canberra this weekend called Voices for Justice, sponsored by the MICA Challenge, a coalition of Christian groups anxious to preserve Australia's focus on international aid and not let it slip off the agenda. But it's about a much wider thing, it seems. It's about raising the consciousness of people in church communities generally that their job is to be involved in the affairs of the world as much as it is about their private trip to heaven. You may have opinions on this one. I'll give you the number. You ready? Write it down. If you're in South Australia, you can ring right away. 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222, Northern Territory or South Australia. And the rest of Australia, give us a buzz too. 1300 800 222. Carl and Chen, let me come back to you for a moment. Can you give us some idea about the figures that we're looking at? There was much hype about the Millennium Goals. We all got excited about it. And there was talk of sort of great achievements by 2015, I think, was the goal, the aim that Millennium Goals should be achieved by. Events over the last few years, not the least of which the global financial crisis, must have knocked the stuffing out of a lot of those arguments. So where are we on all of this?
With the MDGs?
Yeah.
Well, there's been progress towards some MDGs. So
Millennium Development Goals. Yeah. We've got to get
Sorry
the shorthand
for the
right.
That's right. So for the Millennium Development Goals, overall there has been some really great progress. So towards Millennium Development Goal 1, which is about reducing the number of people who live on less than a dollar a day, there has been great progress, and it looks like that goal might be reached. However, on goals like maternal health and child mortality, there hasn't been as much progress as there should be by this point in time. And those are the two goals that are falling behind the most and won't be met unless there is concerted political action from world leaders.
And it is 2015 we're looking at, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It's just 5 years away.
And maternal health and child mortality are regarded, all three, the less than a dollar a day, maternal health and child mortality, were really regarded as baseline indicators, weren't they? That these were the, if you wanted to get a baseline measure across all populations, these were about as basic as you could get.
Yeah, well, those, obviously it's, those, you know, child mortality, we're talking about the number of children who die before their fifth birthday. And many of those deaths happen within the first months of life. So, we're talking about basic survival. And obviously, you know, the survival of women, being able to survive through pregnancy and childbirth, that impacts whole families and whole communities. Mm. And pregnancy is not a sickness.
Indeed.
That you should die from.
Yes. Yeah. So are there any particular countries that one can feel optimistic about, and there are others that are slipping behind?
Look, I think on different goals there's different statistics. So for countries like India and China, where there's been economic growth, you know, they would say that they've lifted a lot of people out of that beyond a $1 a day figure. Although, you know, you need to look at the details of whether the poorest in those countries are getting out of poverty, or whether that's, you know, looking at the whole country's economic growth. So there's still some disparity there.
It appears that Africa really is still the centre of concern for much of this.
Yeah, that's right. So 18 out of 29 developing countries are not on track to reach some of these most urgent goals. And, yeah, particularly in Africa, that's the case. There's a high proportion of poverty, extreme poverty, still in those areas.
Dave Andrews, what sort of methods have been used this weekend to begin to talk to Polly's and others?
I think what's been really important for us is to recognise that as Christians we're called to what I refer to as the blessed revolution of Jesus, to practice the Beatitudes, to be the change by identifying with the poor in spirit, by entering into their pain empathically, by getting angry about the injustice that they suffer, by hungering and thirsting for justice, by doing so in a way that reflects the same kind of mercy that we would want ourselves to extend to others, to do it with integrity, with purity of heart, to work for change non-violently in the midst of a violent world, and to suffer rather than inflict suffering. And when you take the Beatitudes as a framework, it gives Christians a simple ethical guideline for engaging people in a world of poverty and violence. So we've reflected on that, and then we've actually explored specific issues and specific concerns that we want to advocate for people and groups and issues. And we've divided into a range of workshops and seminars that are actually giving them people the knowledge and skills to actually implement that faith and value framework, and then to engage with change in their own lives, in their own community lives, and in partnership with groups and organisations and politicians who we hope and pray will represent our commitment to peace and justice.
Andrew.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Dave's talking about is this weekend calls the people who are involved to immerse themselves in Scripture, to commit themselves to prayer, and to learn some practical skills. So one of the things, I'm not there this year, but the last couple of years, people who've never spoken to a politician before get some basic skills in how you talk to these people. What are the things that you need to...
get a little cheat sheet together.
Absolutely, some brilliant cheat sheets. Because what we're trying to do is to help people to understand the scriptures, to engage with God in prayer, to engage in the world, speaking on behalf of this God and the poor that he so passionately cares about. And those practical
skills... To turn everybody into an effective agent,
yeah, absolutely,
really.
Absolutely.
How many people come to these things? How many years have you been doing this? This is the third year, is it?
Oh, no.
How many?
Carlin?
This is the fifth year that we've held this, and it's grown each year. So the first year we had 130 people that visited about 75 to 80 politicians over 2 days. And this year we have 320 people from all over the country.
Extraordinary.
We have 110 appointments with MPs secured for the next 2 days, and we expect that we'll get more over the next 2 days.
What do you think of it, folks? 1-300-800-222. Should Christians be lobbying politicians on these sorts of things? Is it the role of Christianity to become a sort of political advocacy organisation like GetUp? Do you think it's appropriate? 1-300-800-222. Give us a call. When you're putting together a campaign such as this, you must be challenged by people in the churches who say this is not our, this is not what we should be doing, Andrew.
Sure. I'm afraid I'm fairly blunt. I'll take them back to the scriptures, make it fairly plain that Jesus got in an awful lot of trouble speaking about an awful lot of highly
political
things.
A few of the prophets did too. Yeah.
And I love the Old Testament. I take people back there.
You take Amos, for example. He didn't have much time for people sitting in churches when widows were starving, did he?
No. The very idea that you can claim to have faith in this God and sit on your backside and do nothing strikes me as ludicrous, and I think it struck him as ludicrous as well.
Dave, what about the idea that for many years seemed to be prevalent in churches that, look, God was pretty sick and tired of this world. The only job of Christians was to put people in the heavenly lifeboat, and you know, the affairs of this world were no concern of Christians.
Yes, I was brought up in that tradition myself, so I'm very familiar with it. But as I engage the scriptures, as Andrew is talking about, we find that Jesus doesn't talk about going to heaven. He talks about bringing heaven to earth. And the whole prayer that he used to initiate his disciples into his movement actually asks them to pray, may your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And then when he unpacks that agenda for what life is going to be like when the kingdom of heaven comes to earth, it's give us this day our daily bread. There's a concern for everybody on this planet meeting their basic needs. Otherwise, we cannot experience the quality of life of heaven on earth. And so I think as people engage the scriptures and they begin to read what is actually there, they encounter the agenda of Jesus that for us to incarnate something of the kingdom of heaven on earth, then all of a sudden they realize it's not about personal spiritual insurance. It's about incarnating a way of life that reflects Christ's radical commitment and compassion for the poorest of the poor.
Going on from that, Dave, I think it's fairly clear that if we have a correct understanding of our heavenly destiny, then that's something that needs to be wrapped up in the flesh of our daily lives. And that a key to that heavenly destiny is a future of justice and peace, and of one in which people can enjoy the good things that God has for them. And that's something that, as you say, is not just a pie-in-the-sky by-and-by thing. It's something that is meant to be lived out, to be clothed in the flesh of individuals and communities who are passionately committed to this God and his ultimate purposes.
That's something of a rewrite of the prosperity gospel as conventionally understood. That is, the prosperity gospel says, look, pray to God, if you do the right thing, you'll get the goodies from heaven. What you're suggesting is, well, perhaps the right long-term objective, the wrong short-term sort of thought process has gone on with the prosperity gospel.
I'm not a huge fan of many forms of the prosperity gospel. I think their concern, that one thing they get absolutely right is that God does care about our bodies and our lives here on earth. That's absolutely right. I think many of the forms that they then see that ought to take, there's something wrong about that.
Gets reduced to a cargo cult.
It does, and particularly the thing that I don't think gets clearly articulated, at least in the populist versions of it, is that if God is about blessing, and I think God is, God always blesses us that we can, so that we would then be a conduit of blessings rather than a container of it. That if God blesses us, that's in order that we might bless others. And quite frankly, everyone in Australia is blessed beyond the imagining of most people in this world.
One other question now, this, and Dave, I'll ask you this, and I've got Carlin to give us a view on one or two things, but how does this fit, Dave, with one of the things you outlined before, that this is some sense in which the way of the Christian is one of suffering, that is, you've got to be identified with the poor and the homeless and the justice. I mean, where does this idea of prosperity and the idea of suffering come together?
I think that there is no blessing in suffering. It's not blessed are those that suffer. It's blessed those who are suffer for the sake of righteousness. I mean, what we are called to is not to suffer, but to struggle for justice. And if we suffer in the process of struggling for justice, then we are truly blessed because we're committed to what is really right. But I think the notion of blessing in suffering has become really warped and distorted. I think, as Andrew says, that we've got a God who believes in his creation and who wants to bless his creation and all men and women and children made in the image of God. He desires to realize their full potential. Now, I think in order to engage those people, particularly people who find themselves in situations of dire poverty, I believe we're to incarnate the gospel by coming alongside those people as Jesus did in his day. And if we suffer in that process to help with their transformation, with their liberation, for their redemption, for their reconciliation, for their salvation, then that's just part of the price we pay, like Jesus did, to demonstrate the reality of God's love for people. But it's not about a narcissistic experience of our own personal salvation, but a radical incarnation of the salvation of God in the context of that pain.
The reason I ask that question is because it seems that for some people, where there are poor in the world, if you take a literal vision of the prosperity type gospel, where there are poor, it's somehow because they're outside the will of God, and that's why they're poor and miserable. And if they'd only become Christian and do the right thing and get on the bandwagon, then, you know, everything would be beaut, mate.
Nonsense, in other words. I mean, that kind of reversal, it's really a turning on its head, the notion that God's in the business of blessing people. And the idea then, that the logic or the illogic works like this. If God's in the business of blessing people, then if you're not blessed, that's because God isn't doing that for you. And the reason that
God would
be doing
that
is because you're nasty or you're... And that's just nonsense. Statistically, it's not the case the poorest nations in the world, pagan nations, there are millions of good and godly Christians who are desperately poor and who die as a result of it. The notion that poverty is primarily the fault of ungodly poor is just ludicrous. And if you look at the world as it is, it's fairly clear that there are structural issues, that there are economic systems, that there are patterns of consumption and production, which
we honour and bless and live in.
Quite so. Which dirty our hands and which call us, therefore, to use those hands on for the people who suffer for the sake of our lifestyle.
Carlin, where does this go from here? What are people expected to do when they leave Canberra?
Well, we still have 2 days to go. We've still got 2 days of action in Canberra before we go home. But we do want people to make this a lifelong journey. And what we've been focusing a lot on this weekend is repentance. So starting with ourselves as individuals, recognising the impact of our lifestyles and the choices that we make, recognising the impact that has on the world, on the environment, on the global poor, and making real change in our own lives. And then finding ways to invite others on that journey as well in our communities, spreading the word, doing creative things in our community, connecting with marginalised people in our local communities. And continuing to speak up to justice to our MPs and our nation's leaders. So looking at that structural injustice, but also thinking about what it means for us personally in our own lives and in our communities.
Time to take your calls now on Sunday night to John in Melbourne. Hello, John. Welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
Hi. Just like to say thank you first to Carl and Dave and Andrew there. It's been a wonderful discussion tonight, and I want to thank them for it. I just want to, push the discussion along a bit with a question around, we live in a church culture that, you know, in many ways the imagination has been hijacked by a kind of left-behind theology and that left-behind theory. And I want to push you guys, I'd rather get Dave Andrews to comment, why does it matter that we should be advocating for the poor? I mean, what's the bigger picture here? Because in the left-behind kind of theology, it suggests that no matter what we do here, the whole place is going to be burned up and we're going to be whisked off to heaven. So I'll leave that before you.
I'd just like to comment that I think that the reason that we advocate for the poor is the character of God. In the scriptures, it's actually said, those who insult the poor insult the Maker. That God takes it personally every time a poor person is abused or misused. And I think the reason to engage with poverty is to demonstrate the reality of God's commitment to love and to justice. Now, because God is truly committed to love and justice, I don't believe any act of solidarity will be in vain, that it will not just all be burnt up and disappear into nothingness. I believe that God is a redemptive God, and God is able to take all our acts of solidarity and take them as intercession and a form of embodied prayer for the salvation of all people. And God is able to take that up into his great redemptive plan for the future, for salvation for people in this life and in the life to come. And because of that future that Andrew talked about, God's heavenly future, the future of the kingdom of heaven on earth, then therefore I believe that we can engage in that struggle with great hope, even in the midst of despair.
Andrew, what do you say to those people in church congregations and outside the church who say, look, this is just another lefty front, that basically all you guys are is sort of closet ALP members or disaffected ALP members even, who are going around a bit like the Greenies, only in a different guise, arguing for your particular political barrel?
I mean, I don't think we're the Labour Party in prayer. The first thing I would say is, again, let's go back to the scriptures. I'm evangelical. I guess I bang on about the scriptures a fair bit. I think that's part of our job. But to say that it's some kind of left-wing conspiracy simply clashes with the burden of the scriptures. The thousands of verses that we find in the Bible, the passion that Dave was talking about, that God has for the poor. To say that this is some kind of newfound socialist Christian agenda is quite frankly ludicrous. And in fact, I would take them back to some of the things that they might be concerned about. That is, our heavenly destiny, as Dave was talking about, is one that doesn't disconnect us from this world. The new heavens and new earth for which we long is a new heavens and new earth in which righteousness is at home, or justice finds its welcome. That's what we're working for. To do anything less, I think, is simply to ignore a huge burden of what the scriptures have to say.
Let's go to Barbara in Hobart. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, John. Those people, I forgot their names, you know, it's spot on. The politicians are supposed to be accountable to the people, and their decisions are supposed to be fair. They're not doing enough for the people. We've been ignored. They are paid public servants to work for the people. They just do it their way. And I congratulate the people that's doing this work, and I'd like to be involved with them if I could.
Well, I'm sure there will be a local arena of the Mica Challenge in Hobart, and we'll actually have details of the Mica Challenge posted up on our website, on the Sunday night website.
Oh, I don't know anything about...
You don't know anything about computers? Well,
no.
Why don't we get a number for you to call, and we'll find one and get it for you, so that you can find your local sort of Hobart arena. But generally, you would see that it's very important for Australians to maintain their commitment to international aid, those sorts of things?
Yes, but the politicians, when they get there with all the world leaders, they should be working there to make sure, and they got some control over and have their say, that these people that's on the poverty line in the different areas of the world, they should get to beyond these politicians and that, and make them stand up and be responsible for these people, look after them. But they are neglecting their own people here in Australia too. It's discrimination a lot by bringing a lot of people out, and these are our Australian people are homeless and jobless.
Well, we could widen that discussion, but we won't do that tonight. Barbara, thanks for your call. We will move along, but Barbara, look up in your local area, Tia Fund or the Mica Challenge. I'm sure somebody will be able to help you, but we'll have a number on our website. To David in Melbourne. Hello, David, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Dave.
It's evening, and it's
yeah. Look, I just think religion and politics should stay separate. I think there's too many people have their you have the right to religion and you don't, and I don't think there should be any correlation. I think they should stay out. There's more wars caused through everyone's God being the right one. So I think I don't think it's right. I think you should they should not shouldn't be lobbying, and they should just let it be.
Well, hang on the line. We'll get Andrew's response to that.
That's something I hear a fair bit. First of all, I think you need to do a little bit more work on your facts. In most wars are in fact caused by economic or social agenda. Certainly religion is often used, but that's normally a cloak for people's self-interest. But secondly, the idea that you can somehow keep religion and politics separate simply doesn't work, because religion, if you want to use that term, is something which is fundamental to who human beings are, at least those who have faith, and how they see the world. To say that somehow or another we have to be blinkered so that we can only look at, see, perceive and talk about stuff that somehow is isolated in the religious realm simply doesn't work. None of the religions that I know actually work that way.
That's in your eyes, because you continually bang on, as you were just saying, about scriptures, etc. It may or may not have occurred 2,000 years ago. I think you live a life of that may or may not occur as well. I just think some people in the religious field just walk around just fuzzy-headed about it all and don't see reality.
Dave, do you think that the religion is about how you behave?
I think you can have morals without having religion. I think I think they're just they used to be hooked on drugs, now they're hooked on the Lord. I find it just fascinating how they can believe in something that may or may not have occurred.
There's no doubt that you can have morals without an evangelical or religious framework. Nobody's arguing that. What's being argued is whether or not Christianity, in its very nature, compels those who are Christians to get out and talk about social behaviour.
I go fishing. Well, we have people come on our door to join the fishing club. I have people knock on my door. It drives me mad about wanting to join their religious mob. I say, no, look, that this is personal. If you believe in something, people come and knock on your door.
Dave Andrews.
I want to say a couple of things. First of all, I think that unfortunately there often is an association between religion and violence, and I think that all our religious traditions have contributed to that, and I think all of us in Mica Challenge are aware of those associations and would critique that even more strongly than you. However, we believe that God calls us to engage the world with love and justice. And not coerce other people into change, but to for ourselves to be converted and to be the change we want to see in the world, and invite other people to be a part of that movement as well, but to do so gently, kindly, and non-coercively, because all of us hate manipulation, all of us hate oppression, all of us hate exploitation, and I hate that as much as you do, mate. And I am opposed to that. But I believe that Jesus actually calls us to a gentle engagement with the world where we actually embody the alternatives and invite people to actually practice that love and justice that will make a difference.
I say go quietly. I think that there's a lot of people like myself, like I go to sleep to the ABC every night, and to hear people about this Jesus character, it may or may not have occurred, and the sheer belief that you guys have just, it fascinates me how intelligent people can have this thing about something that may have occurred thousands of years ago. It fascinates me.
Well, I'm glad you're fascinated by it, because I think it is enchanted.
In my eyes.
Well, we can have a discussion about the historical Jesus another night, Dave, and perhaps you'd like to join us for that one. Thanks for your call. Carla, let me bring you back into the conversation now. And we've been talking about sort of activism and where it goes, but let's talk about the practical dimension of Canberra while you're there. You mentioned visiting politicians. What sort of reception are you getting from politicians? And I guess that's as much part of the point as anything.
Yeah, we're getting a fantastic reception from politicians.
Of all parties?
Yeah, absolutely. All parties have responded to us in greater numbers than ever before.
Well, are they all putting their hands up for the Millennium Goals, are they?
I wouldn't say all of them are, but definitely more so than, say, 5 years ago when the campaign started. The Millennium Development Goals were almost a dirty word amongst many politicians, whereas now it seems many of them are falling over each other to show their support for them. And in fact, we had one MP, Yvette Duth, from Petrie in Queensland, who made a speech in Parliament a couple of weeks ago before we even got there, saying she's looking forward to us coming and she's going to welcome us to Parliament House and she's going to come to our events and meet with our people. And we read this on Hansard, and she hadn't even made an appointment with us yet. So we rang her up and said, you know, heard you made this speech in Parliament. What time would you like to meet us? So that's really exciting. And we have the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition, Tony Abbott, coming tomorrow to our signature event in the Great Hall at 7:30 in the morning. And they're going to be presented with a giant scroll that's 40 metres long. It has 10,000 names, which is representative of the 112,000 Christians around Australia who have signed the Micah Call, which is a faith statement in support of the Millennium Development Goals. So they're going to be presented with this 40-metre scroll with handwritten names on it, and we're going to ask them to publicly sign the scroll there in front of us to show their support as well.
What are the words say? What are the words? Because we know what Tony Abbott said about when he signs something, that's when he's to be taken seriously.
That's right. So the words that we are asking them to sign are to show their commitment to the Millennium Development Goals as our nation leaders, and to do all they can as individuals in their party and within Parliament to make those goals not just an aspiration but reality, and to take action.
And anything about the sort of 2015 sort of aim, is that there in the statement as well?
Yes, that's right. So the Millennium Development Goals have 2015 as the deadline, and in September there's going to be a summit, a UN summit in New York, where all world leaders will be invited to attend, including our Prime Minister. And we want Australia to take a package to that UN summit to show how we will do our fair share to contribute to achieving those goals. We don't want Australia to go there empty-handed and just telling other nations what to do, but to show how we are going to take those goals seriously and do our fair share, because currently we don't.
Time for another brief call. Yvonne from Terang. Hello, Yvonne. How are you?
Hello, John. How are you?
Very good.
Look, I've got a couple of quick remarks. To your previous caller, we can go way back before Christ. We can go to Julius Caesar. The fact is this man did exist. Whether he believes he's the Son of God is another thing, but there's no denying the existence. To the caller that rang up and said, why should we care about the call, I would say to him it's called compassion, love, comparing, having a heart, caring. or if you're a Christian, I would call it the breath of God that we've all been endowed with, whether we take care of it. For our politicians, we have a politician in Canberra whose religion is a Catholic, but I don't think he understands the meaning of Christianity. We have another one who is an Anglican, who I think does understand, has the intent, but is not sure how to implement it. We have a third one, who I don't know his religious values, but I do know the man is gay and is not accepted by many religious organisations, and yet everything he stands for is completely Christian. So, you know, there's all these different values, and I think we need to sometimes separate what is religion from Christianity, because I get surprised at what a lot of people do in the name of religion, and people I go to church with who are religious and don't seem to care. I think we focus too much on the Old Testament, which to my mind is to be taught to give us an understanding of what was to come with Christ.
I'm going to have to interrupt, Yvonne. Very good of you to say what you said. I'm not going to sort of dare to disagree with you at the moment because we've run out of time. Andrew Sloan, great to have you with us. Dave Andrews, great to have you with us. And Carlin, we wish you well with the continued organisation of this little exercise in Canberra, and more strength to your arm. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.